and considerations concerning demonic spirits, both in the Sunday school hour and in the morning sermon time. Now, the world is the world of evil spirits has existed as long as man has. And yet most of the world are very ignorant concerning this state of the unseen world. In fact, a very great many do not believe that even such a spirit society exists. Paradoxically, the most Christian nation on earth, the United States of America, is the most unbelieving and skeptical concerning demons. In spite of the fact that they have the religion that has the Bible truth concerning them. Most heathen countries believe in both good spirits and evil spirits. They worship demons who masquerade as gods, and they believe in good spirits, although they do not know that these are actually evil spirits, that masquerading as angels of light. But at the same time, they see the evil and the hurt that comes from those who don't masquerade as deities, but come straight out as whatever they are, whatever the nature they are, they are playing the role of. Even many Christians do not believe in demons at all. In polls taken across America by the different old-line denominations and evangelicals and others, show a great many Christians do not believe in demons or the devil. In spite of the fact that it's in the Bibles. And the reason, of course, is that demons have deceived them. And also because they don't want to believe in them. It interferes with their desired theological concept. And they've yielded to demonic spirits in other areas, and they become worldly Christian liberals, so-called. The only thing they're really liberal about is sin. And they do not believe in demons. And in like manner, many fundamentalists don't believe that demons tempt man from within their body and soul and spirit, and remain there to continue to do so as long as they're given opportunity. One of the reasons is they don't want to believe it. Of course, a lot of them haven't received the revelation of it. But there's a deep-seated antagonism in their minds to believing that demons can be tempting them from within and remaining there if we continue to give them opportunity. Demons of pride and spiritual superiority and lethargy and so forth blind their minds so they won't get delivered. And it interferes with their theological concepts, and they don't want to open up to it. And this stand is maintained regardless of the amount of evidence to the contrary. Demons within them cry, "Oh, demons, demons. Everything you make is demons." That's the same thing that the demons in the communists have done in the anti-communist crusaders. "Oh, communists, communists." Communists are running around saying, "Oh, communists, communists. Everything, make everything communists." And that was one of the campaigns that the communists were told in the United States to push hard. Back at the time when Senator McCarthy began to expose communists in the United States government, the communists got alarmed, and they gave orders to the Communist Party to begin to ridicule and begin to say, "Oh, you make everything communist, you're just going hog wild," and they begin to work that counter-strategy. And the communists and the demons are doing the very same thing. And so the crying of demons out of the mouths of the brothers and sisters admitting who they are considered unworthy of even to consider in their minds on the grounds that their mouths and these voices are not Bible, and therefore they won't even consider it. Strange bit of logic. We should know that a spirit plays a role in someone. That is not intrinsically the nature of the demon itself. An alcoholic spirit was not its original nature. He wasn't born an alcoholic. They don't drink alcohol. An alcoholic spirit is a demon who is pushing men to continually drink alcohol. It is not the nature of the demon. A spirit of Mozart is not the original nature. He wasn't born with the spirit of Mozart. He has taken a particular singer, a musician, who has become famous in the eyes of man, and he is endeavoring to push these various things that have been brought out into the world on people and upon Christians to get them deeply involved in it, for whatever hurt there may be. One person in this assembly was delivered, and they testified of it, of a spirit of Barbara Streisand. Now, the question is, well, is there really such a spirit? I mean, is there really such a spirit as Barbara Streisand? I mean, why should there be a spirit of every movie star, every musician, every athlete, and so forth of ability and artist in the world? Why should there be a spirit like that? And the answer is because people idolize them. This is a form of idolatry. Only Christ is to be imitated. And when we begin to idolize various people of the world that are living in sin, you know, America idolizes the movie stars. They play a role, they're sinners in the first place, rank sinners, playing a role that is not them, and they get idolized for it. And the athletes get idolized. Just because they can throw a round sphere through a hoop more time than somebody else, they get idolized as though there's some great, marvelous thing, taking it way out of comparison. Just because you can plow through a line a little harder, or you get a little faster speed, it's really ridiculous. But it grabs a hold of people until they can't do anything. You know, the Thanksgiving game, the other game, I mean, everything's got to wait and pushed aside to watch. They've watched 11 million times men padded up, running down a field with a spherical, with a ball, pointed ball, hitting, bouncing, throwing, running. It's the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. Millions of times they get so locked in and hooked that nothing can put out a push. Be still, everybody. Shh, it's on. It's on. See? What's on? Some people running down the field against other people with a ball, and which, when it's over, makes no difference. And there's nothing wrong, there's really nothing wrong with, you know, sports, a little competition in sports. There's nothing wrong with that. I used to go to football games. But when you get locked in until this thing gets a hold of you, brother, it is more than just liking sports. It's hogging all your time and energy. When you get lifting weights 6 hours a day, everything is how big, tape it, you know, oil on it, lights, you know. Why, you know, you got a problem. And people are so insensitive to what the devil is doing. Is it really idolatry? Doesn't idolatry require you to make something with a hand and bow down and worship that idol? No. Listen to this. Colossians 3:5. Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth. Fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Covetousness. I would want to be like that hero, see. I want to be like Red Grange, see. I want to be like, there was this Indian that was in the paper the other day, or Jim Thorpe, see. I want to be like, see, this movie star, that athlete, idolizing, coveting, covetousness. I want that. It's a form of, which is idolatry. Every time you pass, some women, they pass that fur coat in the window 900 times and they sit there and their saliva drools. Now, it's one thing to admire something, but it's another thing to get locked into it. Every time that guy passes that jag in a sales window, they stop
And that thing gets a hold of them, and they idolize it until they have to go home. There is an idolization that people have not recognized. We had a person here being delivered, and this person came from sun country, and out in the sun, surfed the sun on the beach. You know, you get browner and browner and browner and browner, and no matter how brown you gotta be out there some more, you gotta be facing that sun, no matter how brown you get. Every day, everything's the sun, the sun. And he got prayed for, and that spirit out of him said, sun worship. She said, sun worship? Baalism, you mean? I mean, I bow down to you, O sun god? No, he said, and he said, worship me, worship me. Sun, worship me. Do you know there are people who have gotten delivered from sun worship here in this place? I don't mean worship as God. They got so locked in to every square inch they could get out in that sun, and to every hour of the day, for every bit of time, so they can get just, they got hooked again on some other excess. Nothing wrong with being in the sun. Nothing wrong with wanting to get tan. Nothing wrong with a lot of these things, but remember, the demons will push everything to excess and get you into idolatry. Nothing wrong with eating. I do it myself. But when you're eating till you're this big, see, there's nothing wrong with sleeping, but when you do it all day long. See, there's nothing wrong with buying clothes, but when you have to buy everything, every penny you got, until you got shoes lined up in rows, wall to wall. We had a woman in this assembly that testified she could not go into a department store. She shopped all the time, and she could not go in without buying a pair of shoes. Every time a force came upon her, she had shoes lined up in long rows. She just had to buy shoes every time. See, it was unnatural. She got delivered from that. These unnatural things are not us. They're demons. They're unnatural. They're unman. They're of another world. One man seeking deliverance said he idolized James Bond. He watched James Bond movie all the time. Every time he was growing up as a boy. And he was obsessed with that spirit. And so the deliverance worker says, all right. He says, I rebuke you, spirit of James Bond. And a voice came out of that mouth and said, Bond. Corrected him. I rebuke you, spirit of James Bond. Boned. Little English accent. It wasn't bond, it was boned. Now, interesting, huh? That was just somebody trying to do what we wanted them to do. Kind of, you see? And he said, now, first of all, how could he have that spirit? Does he have the same demons that was in James Bond? Or does he have the major demon that was in him? Or is in him? And if so, how can one have a spirit of somebody while he's still living? I have a spirit of so-and-so, and the man's still living. You can't have his human spirit. You die. You can't have, how can everybody have his demon? Well, he wouldn't have the demon. Is enough demons of him to go around for everybody? How can you do that? How can millions of people have the same demon or even the same human spirit that somebody else has? You can't. The deliverance leader asked, what were you before you were the James Bond, spirit of James Bond? And another spirit tried to interfere with the answer. He said, Brit. Somebody said, different voice, Brit. And so forth. And they had to fight that thing a bit and get rid of it. And they asked it again. He said, self-made man. Now, you see, this is the answer to the strange names given by a lot of demons. Self-made man pushes God out of the picture till it's not a God-made man. Now, self-made men are looking for whatever fad, image, role that men play down through the earth. It may be Nebuchadnezzar. See, it may be the Caesar Augustus. It may be Charlemagne, Napoleon, say anybody, James Bond, see. It's the spirit of self-made man that takes on, see this spirit of Barbara Streisand. What it is some spirit that appeals to the ego, that hurts man,
looking for somebody to play a role that people will all go,
and then he rushes in and takes on that role. Whether it's Marilyn Monroe or whether it's, somebody else that rushes in, and then you get that name because that's what people are idolizing at the moment. See? Beatles? Anything. So don't be surprised that you get a lot of contemporary names and strange names because that's the role, but underneath is the more basic, intrinsic nature that the thing is playing. And it's not the intrinsic nature of the demon, it's what the role is playing. Now, they play roles, therefore an alcoholic demon could be a demon of lust in somebody else. Because he's not an alcoholic. See, demons are not alcoholics, or are they sexual? They're neutral spirits. They accommodate to Pac-Man or every new thing that comes along. That's why one demon out of prison says, "I like Pac-Man." So that's ridiculous. I mean, why does he like Pac-Man? In other words, he enjoys having this person get hooked on sticking all of his money in a machine to run this little snapping mouth. I didn't know what that thing was for a long time until I finally passed by a place and a pizza parlor says, "Pac-Man." I looked at that little round ball going like this, eating everything else up. And he enjoyed that person getting hooked on that. See? And he doesn't really care if it's legitimate or not legitimate. He'd rather have it not legitimate. The worse the better, but if you want that, at least this, see? In fact, if he can't get you to do something wrong, he'll cause you to push to excess something that is right. Or go off on it. He'll get into your very spiritual worship. He'll tell you that he's Jesus and that you should get up and speak a lot. We had a person want to testify, and I wouldn't let him over in the other church. And he rose up and says, "Well, all I wanted to say is the river has returned." And I says, "No, brother, the river has not returned. Go sit down." "Oh, big man, huh?" And all of a sudden that thing came out, and he waited a while, and he rushed the platform, and two guys grabbed him, and he did a yogi stance on the steps. You see, some spirit wanted him to testify. Now, the testimony probably would involve things about the Lord and so forth, but he would mess it up just enough to be non-edifying, with enough trash and stuff, enough stuff in it, because nobody to be edified, taking time, causing little, the people to wonder about this place and a few other things. Demons will try to get into your mind to get you to do things that hurt. They'll come in. They don't just deal with filthy things or lousy things. They come in with prophecy. They'll give a prophecy. They'll say, "Thus saith the Lord," and they won't say the Antichrist is Jesus either. They'll say good things. Just like that demon did who followed Paul. "These men speak the way of truth. Hear them." It was actually saying Paul was a man of God who speaks the truth. Hear the apostle Paul is what he was saying in the scriptures. He kept doing that until Paul was grieved and cast that spirit out. Now the spirit had a motive that was hidden. They always have hidden motives. His motive was that he knew that eventually Paul would go on in his missionary journeys. And the fact that they spoke by a spirit and aligned themselves with this one, when that one was gone, this one would be able then to capture the hearts of the people because they already had aligned themselves in the spirit with a prophetic voice, a word of knowledge, see. They're clever. They'll come in and give you a prophecy or something if they can, that will cause you to begin, and they'll do a good job copying at first. And they'll say nothing wrong for a while, and keep building and get you hooked on that voice, and then they'll start turning it and start bringing you other things and doctrines and slowly lead you astray if you allow them to. Which is one reason the gifts are to be judged by the pastor and the assembly, and this is one reason why God has put everything under his word, you see, and the spirit of discernment, and to try the spirits, and so forth. Now, the same thing goes, I've been saying, with the spirit of Jezebel. This name comes from the nature of evil that was done in this infamous person of days gone by that we read about in the Bible. One spirit of Jezebel out of a person's mouth said, "I want those grapes." I was speaking about the fact that when Ahab wanted the vineyard of Naboth, who lived nearby, who was an Israelite, and it was a small little vineyard, but he wanted to include that in his, it was nice, and he wanted to buy it from Naboth at a good price. Naboth said, no, I don't want to sell it. This is what I have, and I want to keep it. I like it here. And he was unhappy about it, because Naboth wouldn't sell it to him, and his wife Jezebel said, you're the king. Are you unhappy for that guy? See? And so she went out and lied about him, see, and put him in a bad place in order to get the vineyard. And there was lies, malicious lies told about Naboth that were not the truth, in order to haul him up, see, to hail him up to court and kill him, get rid of him, so that he could have the vineyard. Now, you see, he said, well, Naboth might have done something wrong. People wouldn't be lying. They wouldn't be saying all these things if it wasn't some truth to it. My friend, you don't know the devil when you talk like that. And you don't know history either. And so, we want those grapes, this voice out of the person. And then later on, this voice said, uh-oh, here comes the dogs. I see, Jezebel was thrown out of the window as prophesied, and wild dogs ate her and drank her blood on the streets. Now, I see two possibilities here. You see, first of all, there were no grapes here at Community Chapel for that demon to want. Little grapes. They're all grapes here. The scripture uses grapes as a figure of godly people. His vineyard is full of his grapes, his people. I want those grapes. Now, there's no grapes here, there's no dogs here, in a literal sense. This was not her human spirit. Her human spirit can't come back to people. And it certainly couldn't come back to more than one person at a time if it could. This is not her same demon. This is not the same demon that Jezebel had. There is not enough of those to go around to everybody. See? So either this demon is trying to confuse the Christian and make his testimony appear ridiculous, and so others won't believe, by saying, copying things that they know that Jezebel said, or else these become proverbial sayings with these meanings. I want those grapes. I want to rob her of that which God has given her for me. Or I want those converts out there. I want these grapes. And uh-oh, here comes the end of us and her. We're going to have to leave. Here comes the dogs. Oh, here comes the dogs mean... Oh, this is the end. We've got to leave. See, when she died, they had to leave. Just like, they say, well, that was her Waterloo. That was his Waterloo. Waterloo is the name of a place there up there in Russia where Napoleon's army met his end in the deep snows. It became his Waterloo. The Waterloo was the turning point. And so we say, that's our Waterloo. We don't have a Waterloo here. But the term becomes proverbial for that is your defeat. And so, here comes the dogs, could be a proverbial statement, meaning that's the end, we're going to have to leave now. See, one of the two. What I'm trying to say is, don't believe everything literally that they tell you. And don't believe everything they tell you. Now, the demons in the demoniac at Gadara beseech Christ to cast them into a herd of swine nearby. And there were about 2,000 swine, the scripture says, meaning that the legion of demons in the man was about 2,000. They used a Roman military term, and you cannot have one demon go to more than one swine at a time. And so there were about 2,000 of these spirits. Demons use terms that men relate to, even as God does. So they said legion. They used a Roman military term, of a will about that many. Now, they requested God, they beseeched Jesus, not to be cast into the deep. The Greek is abuthos. Now, abuthos is used in Greek of the primitive ocean. In classical Greek, the primitive ocean, they called the abuthos. The world of the dead, where the spirits go, is called the abuthos. Floods of water was called the abuthos. The interior of the earth, where disembodied spirits went, was called the abuthos. In Revelation 9, demons are loosed out of the abuthos, seen in a vision as a deep pit. This is a vision, remember. He saw a deep pit. And it was called the abusos, the deep. See, the deep, whether it's earth or whether it's water, is called the deep. In Revelation 11, the devil is pictured as a beast out of the abusos, translated bottomless pit in the King James Bible. Now, this must be a figure for either his nature or his kingdom, because as far as we know, he didn't come out of the deep in the literal sense. He didn't come out of something out of the earth or something in a big hole. But, like we see, the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. His whole kingdom speaks of that which is down in the deep pit. In Revelation 23, Satan is seen cast for the last millennium of on earth into the abusos, translated bottomless pit, meaning deep confines. Not the pit, it really has no bottom, not that it goes all the way through the globe and keeps going forever, but rather it's a, you call it bottomless if you can't find the bottom. In other words, out of sight totally. In Romans 11:7, the question is asked, who shall ascend into the deep, the abusos, that is to bring up Christ again from the dead? Now, this is an impossible thing, but speaking of the confines or the prison of departed spirits of men waiting to be freed by Christ, where Christ's spirit went at death. And so it's a hypothetical question posed. And so it spoke of where Christ went to preach the spirits held in a prison house, not a real prison, but imprisoned, meaning they can't leave. That is not a metal prison or a stone prison, but a real prison inasmuch as they were confined there and was called abusos. In Revelation 9:14, I said all that to say this. Four angels were loosed from the Euphrates River, which was the river of Babylon. Now these angels must be evil angels because the context tells you that they went out to slay men. Now, God's angels could also be the slayers of men. But these must be, I think, evil angels, even as in Revelation 12:7, the Bible says, Michael and his angels, good ones, fought against the dragon, the devil, and his angels, which are evil ones. Evil angels, meaning messengers. Now, here we saw four angels, strong angels, probably four princely demons, loosed, that were bound in the river Euphrates. And it caused them to lead 200 million demons to slay one-third of men, the Bible says. 200 million to slay the one-third of men. Now, it didn't say slaying them without operating through other people, remember. It didn't say that. They worked through people. Now, probably, but not necessarily, the 200 million demons were also bound in the deep, that is, in the river that symbolizes Babylon. Well, for 1,500 years, Nimrod, Assyria, and Babylon fought God's people, tempted, corrupted them, brought them into captivity. Now, even as Revelation chapter 20 shows Satan bound for 1,000 years during the millennium, it never said the demons were bound. But you don't concur them because the Bible didn't say so. Therefore, it's not the demons are not bound. Only Satan is bound. You can be sure that if the king is bound, his kingdom is bound. So if Satan is bound, the demons under him are bound. What if four angels that were bound in the river Euphrates were loosed to lead 200 million demons? The probability is the 200 million demons were bound with them. And so when he was unbound, the demons came out also. Even as there's Michael and his angels, and the demons and his angels, Lucifer and his angels, fallen Lucifer. Now, these must be, therefore, princely demons, over 200 million demons, loosed after the rapture before Armageddon, as the picture shows. Perhaps bound by God, I say perhaps, we don't know. Perhaps bound by God, when were they bound? Why did they get bound there? When were they bound? We don't know the answer. But at the resurrection, when Christ died, he defeated the headship of Satan. And at his resurrection, souls were let loose, and there's a possibility that there were many demons bound at that time. And they could be bound in that river, which symbolizes Babel of voices, It symbolizes that which is against God, even as the whole world should be called World Babylon in the last days, and that kingdom that has existed for so long under Nimrod, Assyria, and Babylon for 1,500 years, it could have bound them there in that physical place. It may be figurative, but he has to bind them someplace. It could have been bound there. And it could have been bound at the time of the death and resurrection of Christ. Perhaps this is the abusos, or the deep that the demons in Christ's day wanted to escape by going to a herd of swine. We don't know, but he said, don't cast us into the abusos. Don't cast us into the deep. And we don't really know for sure, because the deep is used, the abusos is used of several different things, meaning deep. Now, perhaps, again, just perhaps, warring angels are the demons of soldiers who, fighting Israel in days gone by. These soldiers fighting God. Were slain. What happened to the demons? Because God was overcoming them, God was bringing victory, and they were praying to God. Perhaps those demons were bound, and in that river, Euphrates. I don't know. We don't know. Perhaps when God's people were released from captivity, or when they repented and they defeated those nations, God bound from time to time these ones, and they were being bound and held there. We don't know. Perhaps from the time of their fall, they were never allowed to be loosed upon earth, and they were held there all this time. We don't know. But demons go through walls. They're spirits. Material doesn't affect them. They go through people. They go through the body of the swine, into the swine. They're not held by a material world. Remember, I mentioned to you once before that in a book called Einstein and the Fourth Dimension by Lincoln Burnett, that he mentioned how that it's only the magnetic attraction that holds the different protons and neutrons and mesons and so forth together in the atom world. And he said, for example, Einstein said, there's room for millions of people in the same space, even to live in a wall, and never have any neutron or proton interfere with each other. If it wasn't for this force that is holding them together, that prohibits it, it's the force, it's not the material. We think of it as material. You can't be there, it's there. But actually, the distance between these things are so great in relation to the size of them that the thing that's really stopping is what we would call space, excepting that it's really a force held. It's a force that keeps it from going in there, not the substance. The spirit world is not subject to that particular material force. There is a spiritual force, another force, and it can pass right on through that and mean nothing. Now, demons can go into the earth, be held into the nether part of the earth. He said, oh, you mean down in that solid mass down there? And this? It's not subject to physical realm. It means absolutely nothing to it. Just like your radio waves. They go right through the walls of your house, and right through your body, crisscross through you all the time. And you don't even think that's so strange. They can go through steel and everything. They go right on through all kinds of things. And the spirit world the same way. The spirits could be confined into a river, same as the other, without, you say, oh, you mean in the water and so forth? That's because you're thinking in a material realm. And God could, if you wanted to confine them there at that time, in that place which symbolizes it, symbolizes a certain thing for a certain day to loose them. But they're confined to this planet, or at least to this universe. And now when these swine drowned, these demons were free. They could then leave the swine. Now in the process, they ruined the livelihood of a herdsman. Now they knew better than to ask to go into a flock of sheep. You see, the sheep symbolize God's people. God would not allow them to. If you ever notice, all down through history, whenever demons have manifest in an animal, it has always been in a carnivorous, attacking, claw, chewing, biting, howling, some kind of animal that is that has come because of a curse or that is involved with killing or something that's dirty or unclean in some way. Unclean for food according to the Deuteronomy Code or something. And he doesn't come, he comes as a serpent, as a spider. If people see him, you know, they don't see him as a lamb. They don't see him as that which is like a little bluebird, as a dove. See, the Holy Spirit has used these other terms. And in the world that God has created, he's made some things of one nature and some of another, or at least they have taken on this nature because of the curse, and some are used to symbolize the things of the Lord and his people, and some are used to symbolize the other. The wolf and the sheep symbolize opposites. The sheep don't eat wolves, but wolves do eat sheep. And God has limited them, and he won't let them appear apparently in the other form, at least for the mean. Now, we had a case just not long ago in our assembly when there was a child that was crying and fussy, and they just couldn't sleep night after night after night. They couldn't sleep. And they went through the room, and they threw out the different things that it had that, you know, might be a problem, and they couldn't find what's the problem. And finally, they stood there and looked at the wall and said, you know, could it be that the unicorns on this wallpaper is causing a problem? Can the ink wheel cause a problem? I mean, could it cause a problem? And they couldn't really believe that, and so they left it there, and they knew it was unicorns. They said, well, you know, hate to get on the wallpaper, you know, and they want to be ridiculous, you know. So they stripped it off, and he slept ever since. No problem. Now, does that mean that the demons went into the ink? No. They came into the room because they were invited. Now, more about that in just a moment. I want to say, first of all, demons are not in every owl and swine that God creates. See, the demons went into the swine. They weren't already there. These things have to be used in an occult fashion or be used by the devil in some worship or some type of thing in order to symbolize them and give them some reason to want to enter into the object made of them. Now, there's more to objects than what some Christians have found yet, because they're too worldly, university bred, with their skeptical minds and demons to help, in which they look at everything in a materialistic, rationalistic sense, and they don't know much about the spirit world. And therefore, they wrongly conclude that these things could not be a problem, because they're only looking at it from a rationalistic, worldly sense. If you begin looking at things from the Bible sense and see what's happened, you begin understanding that God has laws and restrictions in the spirit world. He's allowed certain things for certain reasons. You've got to find out what those reasons are and not make up your own as you go along. Now, it isn't like somebody's drawing some cute little bunny rabbit or owl or something and boom, the demon rushes in. See, some people have gone overboard in this. And every time somebody draws something that God's created, they think, a demon is there. That doesn't mean that. I've taught you that before. Please listen to the qualifications. Some people take what you say, take all the qualifications and throw them away because they're willing to believe it without the qualifications. But I want you to believe it with the qualifications, not without the qualifications. However, unicorns were never created by God. And they represent something of a false deity and wrong world. Now, these demons were not in the ink of the wallpaper, living in the ink. But because that person took somebody, plastered that wall, knowingly or unknowingly, is beside the point, with demon symbols, that which represents false gods and a worship of demons or whatever it represents, these demons came into this environment to hassle a person living under the protection of these unicorns. If you put them up, you know, then that's what you're going to get. Now, let me give you a little bit of Bible precedence for this. See, these are like, it's like putting a flag up over a fort. It represents what's inside. The cherubim in the tabernacle, all over the walls, the ceilings, the curtain, and on the mercy seat, invited the presence of God in. Now, they took the Ark of the Covenant wherever they went. Well, the Ark of the Covenant went, God's Spirit went. And they would take it into battle with them because they learned that God was with the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant was made by man. It was wood. It was gold. It had objects in it. It had no power of its own. It couldn't do anything. It wasn't magic. It was only a figurative, symbolic, typological representation of the Lord Jesus Christ and God in Him, the God-man, the gold and the wood together. Therefore, because of what it typified in the covenant made with them, the Spirit of the Lord went with that ark. The Philistines at one time, because of the sins of God's people, captured the ark, which they wouldn't have been able to do if they'd walked with God properly. God allowed Himself in symbol to be captured because they didn't respect it as they should and respect Him as they should. The Philistines had it. They took the ark and they set it down in the house of Dagon, the fish god. There's a large, huge fish god going way up near the ceiling in this big room. And they put it down right just inside the door. They opened the door and just took it inside the door and closed the door. And the next morning they opened the door and Dagon had fallen down before the ark and broke his neck across the threshold of the door. It had bowed down to that thing. A stone made by man bowed down before wood and gold made by man. There was a spirit involved in that Dagon god, and there was the Spirit of the Lord in that Ark of the Covenant, and it bowed down before it, according to the Scriptures. They took the Ark of the Covenant, was taken up and put in the house of a priest, Obed-Edom. And God blessed that house from the day the ark entered, the entire time it was there, a couple of years, I think. All the time it was there, the blessings of God was upon that priest and the household, it said. Not just the priest, but the household, the mother, the children. The blessing of God was there because the symbol, and God came to the symbol that represented Him. When David saw that, he said, I'd like to have that in Jerusalem. And so they went to get it because he knew. And when they saw it coming down the road, David danced before the Lord. That's when he danced, because he knew the Spirit of the Lord was coming with the homing device of God, the Ark of the Covenant. And they put it there and built a tent for it and put it there in his palace. And then when Solomon's temple was built, it was put in Solomon's temple. Now, in fact, the whole tabernacle was put in Solomon's temple. Now, God is concerned about symbols that represent things. When the Arabs started rounding their beards, God made a law and says, do not round the corners of your beards. You mean God cares if your beard has a round or square corner or jagged corner or irregular? He does if the Arabs round theirs, because He did not want you looking like an Arab. Oh, it's kind of neat to look at. You see that Arab, how he came in the other day? You know, he had that round. It was kind of a neat look, you know. New fad come in, you know. See? Round corners in Israel. You know, everybody with the round corners. Looking like Arabs. See, the world is full of fads, looking like somebody else. Something else. The hippies start with long hair, and the men all have started with long hair, see? Some president, the president wife or queen or prince or somebody does something a certain way and everybody starts wearing the clothes of the hill like them. People are copying other people and other things. Well, if these things represent bad things, God says no. It's bad association. There are nations in this earth in which they will not allow you into the country if you're a man with a long hair, because it represents what they have seen in these Americans, hippies and so forth with their long hair, and they don't want any part of it. Also, jeans. You cannot go into the country with jeans in some of those countries, or bell-bottom trousers. Some of the morals of, I've been reading and visiting various countries, the things you have to watch out for. Now, the Scripture says, men don't have long hair.
Women, don't cut your hair short. But a lot of people, they go, oh, my God doesn't kill. I don't know who they think this is talking. And they go on disobeying it because the new fad, Glamour magazine, the media and the push of the world, because there's so much in the world that they'd rather follow the world than God. Now, women, don't wear your hair mannish, real short. God says it's an abomination to them. And men, don't wear your hair long. Now, when I'm on the line, I won't charge any extra for this one. Makeup, women. Can I talk to you, men? You can go to sleep now for a minute. I'm going to tell you where the line is. You say, well, where's the line? I mean, everybody's got a different opinion. Different ideas, different opinions, your opinion, somebody. Who knows where the line is? I do. I'm going to tell you where the line is, and I want you to follow it. I'm your pastor. I'm your shepherd. I want you to follow it. Now, the line is not determined by Glamour magazine. The line is not determined by your likes or current fads. It isn't, well, I've come to like this. Anytime people are subject to a certain thing and they watch it long enough, they can develop an appetite for it and come to like it. That does not mean it's the proper line. Nor is it determined by what you think or what you have thought. Because, well, I think, but that's not what the line is. Because your thinking may not be predicated on a knowledge of where the line is, but only as you look at people and things, you develop a certain standard commensurate with what you have seen in the world. And that is not where the line is. Now, I say this with some qualification. Although every line in the church must be established by the pastor and followed, nonetheless, this all-pervading principle and line is not decided by this pastor or that pastor. Although you must obey your pastor and he must set the rule in the church, and the rule of propriety in that church must be governed by the rule of that church that that church goes by. In this church, you may have a different standard, and you must go by the standard of that church. But the standard of universal propriety under God is based on an unchanging standard and principle. And we've had the world change that principle for us and set a standard that is not a proper standard. Now, in this assembly, we are not perfectly following the standard. I would like the ladies of this church to be willing to move to the standard. Now, some of them are at the standard. Some are very close. Not many are too far, like in a lot of places. But if you're not at the standard, if you can move toward it, I would appreciate it. You say, well, I don't like that as well. That may be. You may have developed an attitude for something that is not what the line is. And people do that all the time. People come in, they've developed appetite for, you know, dinner wine, cigar after dinner, R-rated movies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just because you develop an appetite for something doesn't mean you should go on at that standard. The pastor is not to come down to your standard, but to lift you up to a standard that he believes to be a higher standard than God's standard. Now, I'm not a legalistic clothesline preacher, and I've had enough of that to last me more than a lifetime in growing up. Everybody making up their own idea with just from their own head, and so forth. I've tried to be generous in that, and only set the line at the bottom line that I can prevail at and operate in. Now, here is the line. The line is God created versus non-created. In other words, human versus non-human. In other words, natural versus unnatural. Now, let me qualify this. I don't mean the way you came out of the womb or the way you are without any change. That's not what I'm talking about. It's not wrong, in my judgment, to add teeth when you had teeth knocked out, or to add hair when you have had hair fall out, or to add color when you have had color go out. Going back to natural is not wrong, in my judgment. There are people that make these rules up, but they got them out of their hip pocket. They didn't get them from the principles of God. They think, well, just because you don't have it, because you lost hair, you can't put any more back on. The Bible doesn't say such thing as that.
To go from, you, it's natural to have hell, and so if you go into an unnatural state by disease, for example, you can add hell back. You say, oh, if it's a disease, it's okay. Well, where do you get the idea that it's okay to have hell here if there's no disease, or if you had a disease, but not if it fell off for any other reason? The looks are the same. See, this is not reasonable in my judgment. It's not wrong to make your skin unpocked as it was before you had smallpox. And therefore, it's not wrong to make your skin unpocked as it were even if you didn't have smallpox. Smooth skin is not unnatural. Therefore, see, God did not hand create you. There are people that teach, God, if God, well, he wanted you fat, dear, that's why he made you that way. He wanted you with a crooked nose and deviated septum and he wanted you with a hairy lip and he wanted you. God did not make people that way. He set a law on operations of genes and so forth and the inner playing, the inner relations of different genes coming into play and so forth and mutations and other problems, some of them caused by sin, causes certain things. God does not care if you wear gold and silver. Because in the scriptures, they even used it. Abraham sent out his servant to get a wife for his son and brought her gold earrings to symbolize that which God... See, God in the scriptures has not only not forbidden it, he's even given pictures of it and applied it spiritually. God does not care if you take something and put it on your hands, your rings, and so forth. But there is... The propriety does depend upon where you're at. If you're in a certain place and they don't wear a certain thing or connotate something heathen or bad, then you don't wear it. Now, God doesn't really care if you wear your hair one way or another in general, as long as it doesn't get into pride or bad associations, etc. Or if you shave your beard. God grows it, you shave it. He grows it, you shave it. He grows it, you shave it. People say, oh, I believe in being natural. I don't believe you can have any peaches and cream makeup here. It could be natural. Well, then how come you don't have a beard? I mean, he grows it, you shave it, he grows it, you shave it, he grows it, you shave it. I mean, what form of rebellion is this? See? But God, in his word, has talked about the razor, allows his people to use it. Paul used it once. Or so, and there's nothing wrong to enhance yourself as Israel did. But here's the thing: when you start making yourself like a clown, when you make yourself like God never made anybody, that's where the line is. Now, if you want to make your skin more beautiful and appear like better skin that God makes, fine. If you want to highlight a little bit, a little shadow here, it's looking like a shadow, fine. There's nothing wrong with, if your hair or skin is looking like human hair or skin, no problem. Be as beautiful as you can make yourself. But as soon as you begin looking non-human. Now, let me give you an example. You say, what's non-human? The whole eyelid from here to here is blue. God doesn't make people with blue skin. All blue. What makes your eyes more blue? That's no excuse. He might paint a great big swath across your blue and here across you and across the nose. That may make your eyes look bluer too, but that's not the point. God didn't make people with blue skin. What if we had a fat, everybody starts having green skin? See? I mean, it's wrong because God didn't make you that way. See? Don't putty your ears up points. If you have a nick out of one and you can have a plastic surgeon fill it in like this, fine. But don't have them fill it in like this. See? Keep human. See? Now, ladies, this one's going to be more difficult for you. Nails like Nebuchadnezzar out in the field, that long and bright red, is not human. It's not even subhuman. It's extraterrestrial. But it's brought in Glamour magazine to make you more glamorous. And I don't look like hawks on a fence. It's not more glamorous. These long, and you get to like them, although I don't. These long claws out here, you know, in which you can't touch anything. Bright red Make, if you want to get a little, if you look pale and like a little bit of, look like you got a little bit of blood in your system, Adam, blood of the earth, a little blush, a little blood, nice and, you know, nice skin, healthy looking skin looking, and under your fingernails, fine. But when you go into reds and frosted and whites and greens and all these things, you know, you are going to, from human to non-human. I feel like the line of propriety is simply that. If you can look more beautiful and stay human, fine. But when you cross the line and go to what God has not created into non-human, you're crossing the line. That's what I think. And it can be a stumbling block to people, including me. I won't really stumble, just skid a little bit. Now, I'm only half done, but I'm going to quit for right now. I've left that subject, so you can rest on that. Don't anybody go home because of that. In the morning worship, after morning worship time, I will complete this sermon. And